Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, a tremendous Tuesday to you. Back into the swing of things with another tremendous show. Kirk Cousins did not sign that long-term deal with the Redskins, and neither did Kirk. I've got thoughts on that. We also had a great light beer debate, and the Lakers are right back where they belong in the rafters, even if it's just for Summer League, and three nice guests as well. Dan Wetzel, Yahoo Sports, the head football coach at Virginia Tech, Justin Fuente, and Atlanta Falcons quarterback Matt Ryan. Like I said, a big day today, solid day today, and a nice, tight podcast to get you all caught up on. Alvin, let's go ahead and do this thing right now. I want to start with the NFL. Yesterday's 4 p.m. deadline for long-term extensions for franchise players came and they went. Came and went without, for instance, Washington agreeing to a new deal with Kirk Cousins. I want to start right there. Now, to me, that's not that big of a surprise. What was a surprise, and maybe it shouldn't have been, was how the Redskins handled it by releasing a statement that took a weird situation and made it worse. Much worse. I mean, the team could not wait to tell everybody that back in May, they had offered Cousins $53 million and a deal that, quote, would have made him at least the second highest paid player by average per year in NFL history, end quote. Then they went out of their way to add that his reps never even made a counter. I mean, like $53 million. That sounds incredibly generous, doesn't it? Sure, until you realize that he's due to receive $24 million this year and that he would make roughly $29 million next year under the transition tag. Add 24 plus 29, and what do you get? You get 53. No wonder there wasn't much of a response from the quarterback's reps. The team did not make a serious offer, and then they chased it with yesterday's statement, trying to make him look bad, which is whack, and then all he's done is make them look good. So that in and of itself was bad enough. But then there's this. Then there's the audio of team president Bruce Allen laying out the team's case.
After discussions with Kirk this weekend, face-to-face.
Wait, what? I mean, sorry, stop that for a second, Alvy. Did he just call Kirk Cousins Kurt? I mean, it had to be a misspeak, right? No way he does that again. Right? Wrong.
I wanted to clarify our negotiations for this year. Kurt is obviously an important part of our organization. And is.
Yeah, I can tell. Hey, listen, we all screw something up once. Maybe we screw it up again a second time. But nobody would do that a third time. Not when you're referring to your quarterback and the face of the franchise. Right?
Our goal was to sign Kirk to a long-term contract.
All right, we're all human. Everybody has bad days. I'm sure this has been an extremely stressful time. No chance this guy does that again. So, let's roll the tape once again and just hear the rest of the statement.
On May 2nd, we made Kirk an offer that included the highest fully guaranteed amount upon signing.
There you go. Kurt, number four. Again, probably just a misspeak, a stumble. Maybe he tripped up. It happens. It happens to us all. Roll it again.
But despite our repeated attempts, we have not received any offer from Kurt's agent this year.
Now there you go. One for the thumb. Five Kurts in a single statement. But I am a glass half full kind of guy, so I'm going to give the man the benefit of the doubt. There is no way that he would do that again. Absolutely no way at all.
Kurt has made it clear that he prefers to play on a year-to-year basis.
That's it. Now you're just trolling us. Did you seriously just refer to your starting quarterback as Kurt? Carl didn't want any of that? No love for Kip Cousins? Craig Cousins, Kev Cousins, Kareem Cousins, Caden Cousins, Kanye Cousins,
Kurt.
Kennesaw Mountain Cousins,
Kurt.
Or maybe you were thinking of your great signal caller, Kent Nephews.
Kurt.
Way to go, Bryce Allen.
Kurt.
Nothing says respecting your starting quarterback like calling him by the wrong name repeatedly, Bob.
Kurt.
This is a really bad look for Brent Allen.
Kurt.
And exactly what the hell is going on in Washington? The Blaze Allen,
Kurt,
that I know would never make a mistake like that. I mean, sure, Bodie Allen,
Kurt,
makes a misspeak once or twice, but I know Blake Allen,
Kurt,
the way I think I know Brady Allen,
Kurt,
he would never do something like that. And maybe that's why Kirk Cousins reps never
Kurt.
Got back to you, because you made the offer to some dude named Kurt Cousins.
Kurt.
And if you thought that was the end of the embarrassment for the team yesterday, you'd be wrong yet again. Because when reached for comment about the fact that the team president had just called a starting quarterback the wrong name over and over and over again, a team spokesman actually told ESPN that it only sounded that way because of Bryce's accent.
Kurt.
Wait, what? What kind of an accent changes Kirk to Kurt?
Kurt.
And if that really is his accent, it might be time to change it up. Maybe show that you care about your quarterback by changing the way you speak so you can say his name. It might be time then for Bartholomew Allen,
Kurt,
to step away from these negotiations and let somebody else step in. Because Kirk Cousins,
Kurt,
deserves to be treated with the respect given to other great Washington quarterbacks such as Jonas Theismann,
Kurt,
Don Williams,
Kurt,
and MacGyver Rippon.
Kurt.
Couldn't have jacked that up any worse. Dan Wetzel is everywhere, and he joins us once again. Dan, you wrote what I thought was a great piece for Yahoo yesterday about O.J. Simpson. At 1 p.m. Eastern on Thursday, Simpson's parole hearing is going to be televised. How do you think that broadcast is going to look and feel?
It's going to be like the 90s all over again, Jim. I think the whole country is going to stop and watch this thing. Unusual move by the state of Nevada. They're going to allow a pool feed to go out and you can and show this thing live. Now, generally, not a lot of interest in parole hearings, but they're going to have the parole board up at in a meeting room in Carson City. They're going to have OJ at his prison in Lovelock, and he'll be by video, and this thing will go out live to whoever wants to broadcast it, which I assume will be pretty much everybody.
Dan Wetzel joining us. If things being what they are, Dan, and this being in Nevada, among other things, the odds are out already. And I'm looking at this. O.J. Simpson granted parole in 2017. You can have that at minus 475. So is there any reason to think that he's not going to be granted parole this time?
Well, his disciplinary record is not publicly available. So we don't know for sure, but there's obviously a lot of confidence in the Simpson camp. And what this is it's not like when Red had to go in on Shawshank and plead his case.
Right.
Although OJ will be able to address the parole board. Mostly this is like a worksheet, and you get a certain number of points for whatever's gone down. So if you've had a disciplinary issue in the last 2 years, that's 1 point. If you've done this, there's a point. And it's pretty much just a checklist, and it's arbitrary. And if he gets, you know, a low enough score, basically 0 to 5, he's automatically going to get out, almost automatically. If it's like 6 to 11, he's probably getting out. Even if it's 12 or over, he's got a chance. The Simpson camp is very confident, and obviously they know his disciplinary record, that they're gonna be fine. And so 2 years ago, I think it was 2 years ago or 3 years ago, he has a number of charges here in this case, and one of them he was up for parole on that conviction, and he earned the parole then. So now these are the rest of the convictions he's up for, and so the presumption is, unless he all of a sudden started getting in a lot of trouble in the last 2 years, which we have no indication, he's going to get the parole again. This really isn't a judgment call, although he can answer questions and make a statement to the – actually, I think you just make a statement to the parole board.
Clones, can you give me 1 minute so I can talk to you about Stamps.com? Stamps.com saves you time and money, which you can use to grow your business. I can mail any letter, any package using just my computer and printer, and the mailman picks it right up. I can avoid the hassle of the post office and mail everything from postcards to envelopes to packages, domestic or international. Stamps.com makes it so easy. They'll send you a digital scale, automatically calculates exact postage. Stamps.com. We will help you decide the very best class of mail based on your needs. There is no need to lease an expensive postage meter. Don't do that. I use Stamps.com for a number of reasons, but most of all, because I hate going to the post office, and I'll never do it ever again. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com. Click on the microphone at the very top of the homepage. Type in Rome. Stamps.com. Enter Rome. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office ever again. That's Stamps.com. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. And Dan Wetzel is a columnist for Yahoo Sports, also a New York Times bestselling author. So Dan, if in fact parole is approved, he would not be released until October 1st. But once that happens, then what happens? For instance, do you think this guy's just going to go away and disappear, or do you think there's going to be a whole round of interviews and maybe something even more than that?
I think that's the real question. I think what you'll see is there's going to be blanket coverage tomorrow, and then on October 1st at 12:01, there will be helicopters flying over the Lovelock prison. There will be a huge throng of media trying to trail however he comes out. Presumably somebody picks him up. You know, they don't just give him $200 and his blue jeans back and a train ticket. Someone's going to pick him up, and it's going to be a huge frenzy. What happens then, you know? And I don't know. Is he going to get a reality TV show? Is he going to get a book deal? Is he going to sit down for some, you know, huge interview where he gets paid? He's remained very quiet, has had opportunity throughout his last 9 years in prison in Nevada to do interviews. He has chosen not to. Will he do autograph signings? I don't know. Or does he just, at 70 years old, go play golf with his friends, which I think he's going to play golf no matter what, hang out with his kids, grandkids, and things like that, and just try to live a quiet life the rest of the way? That's really the question. I don't know. I kind of feel like America will automatically go to the worst of us, and it'll probably be a big frenzy and reality shows and all of that.
Dan Wetzel joining us. He's the co-host of the Wetzel of 40 podcast as well. Dan, before you go, let me get you to shift gears if you don't mind. You were in Toronto last week for one of the Mayweather-McGregor publicity tour events. How would you describe that experience?
You know, the Toronto one was really festive, is how I would describe it. You know, it's basically late afternoon. It's a light rain, and like 12,000 people show up at this, you know, at this amphitheater. It's like a concert venue or something on the lake in Toronto. And there's all these guys drinking beers and hanging out, and they Drake shows up and they play the whole thing, and the guys kind of perform. I think it was everything they wanted that world tour. I think it got increasingly ugly as it went on. Not all of it was certainly positive, but it was like something that I've never seen before, where you could have a world tour for a fight or almost anything and get that big of a crowd. I don't think, you know, 2 weeks before the Super Bowl, you could have put Matt Ryan and Tom Brady and flown them around the world and gotten 10, 15,000 people to show up at stadiums just to hear them talk. It's almost like nothing else that we've really seen. And I think they accomplished their goal. And that I don't know a whole lot of people who didn't at least hear about the promotional tour and thus talk about the fight 6 weeks ahead of time. And talking to the promoters, one of their concerns is when you're going to charge $100 to watch this fight, you need people to plan to watch the fight. You need people to say, I'm going to have the guys over, come over my house and watch it. Everyone kick in $10, $20. You can't count on people just sitting there at their house at the last minute saying, yeah, I'm going to drop $100 on this because it's a lot. They needed to get that hype out where July 26th, I think it is, or August 26th or 25th, whatever it is, you know, you're circling that in the calendar and saying, hey, that's a night everyone's coming over our house, or we're going over this place. And so I think they really accomplished that goal. Mayweather's an incredible promoter. McGregor is his superior in that manner.
One last thought before you go, and this is critical. You were not only regarded as one of America's greatest sports writers, Dan, but you're also one of America's leading Bush Light enthusiasts. It's a very controversial stance. Lay it out for me. Why are you such a staunch advocate for Bush Light?
I like to just say, I have no sponsorship deal here.
Right.
I should, but I have no sponsorship deal. So this is a true blessing. Look, you get Bush Light, you got to get it really, really cold. Like a warm Bush Light is terrible. I'm gonna say that. Even a lukewarm. You get that thing in ice, some ice water, let it sit. You can drink a whole bunch of them. You got to drink more than one. You got to buckle in and go. And you can drink a whole bunch of them, and you wake up the next day, you hardly even know it. Tastes good, refreshing, and it's like an anti-hangover because I think it's mostly water.
All right, so why Bush Light over Natty?
The Brooklyn hipsters hate me for this, but I'm not backing down.
All right, so why Bush Light over Natty Light or Coors Light or any other light?
Well, they're all good, but, you know, that's just my choice.
Dan Wetzel,
little mountains on the can. Sometimes they got the NASCAR theme, you know.
It's who you are. It's what you do. It's what you represent. It's all good.
I'm really glad that this is who I am on National Radio.
Well, Danny, I have given you a lot of credit. You are as good of a sports writer as I know, and I mean that sincerely. But then again, you got to represent your beer, right? You are who you
exactly.
are. I get it.
Got to be true to yourself, authentic.
Dave in Wisconsin.
Jim, hey, Bush Light is a beautiful, beautiful thing. 30 packs. I got 4 30 packs in my garage, in my fridge out there, ready for a party at all times. 120 cans, pure fun, under $70. Can't beat it.
At any given sitting, how many of those Bush Lights do you slam?
Oh, I choose not to count, Jim.
Classy, my man. Rack him.
Rack him!
Yeah! Laker Nation, how you feeling right now? Based on what I saw last night, you're feeling pretty good. You're feeling pretty damn good. How amped are Laker fans? People were lining up outside the arena before that game started. In Vegas, in July, in triple-digit heat. On a Monday night, they were dropping defense chants in the fourth quarter. I thought that roof was going to come right off Thomas and Mack when Kyle Kuzma hit from deep at the end of the third quarter. That barn has not been that loud since Larry, Stacy, and Greg and Anderson were killing it on the court and Tark was on the sideline. That wasn't a summer league game. Not for Laker fan. For Laker fan, that was a basketball game, a rock festival, and a borderline religious experience all rolled into one. I haven't seen Laker fan that fired up since, hell, I don't even remember when. That was Showtime and the Kobe Shaq days all rolled into one. And after missing the playoffs for 4 straight seasons, I can't say that I blame Laker fan. Those 4 years must have felt like 40 to Laker fans. Especially lately, when the only thing they had to cheer for were the Clippers losing. And they won that championship game without Lonzo Ball. The unanimous Summer League MVP was on the bench with a calf injury. Then again, who needs Lonzo when you have Alex Caruso carving up defenses and dropping dream shakes on fools? Or when you've got Matt Thomas, the pride of Iowa State, killing Portland from deep? And yes, before you check me, I'll admit all this comes with a giant caveat. It is Summer League. And a lot of times, what happens in Las Vegas Summer League stays in Las Vegas Summer League. Hey-o!
Hey-o!
We all know that. Nobody's going to confuse Alex Caruso with Jerry West. Even though Laker fans were acting like the logo himself was out there crossing up and blowing past guys. Just like nobody's going to confuse beating Portland's Summer League team with beating Portland's actual team, or Houston, or San Antonio, or Golden State, or any of the other monsters in the Western Conference. But I'm here to tell you, something did happen over the past few days in Vegas. All the hype and excitement wasn't over Caruso and Thomas, as nice as they looked. This was about Lonzo and what he did when he did play. 16 points. 9 assists, 8 boards, 2.5 steals, and a block per game. But it's not even about that. It's about the freaky dimes he was dropping. Just ask Lakers Summer League coach Judd Bushler. He said, quote, "He's already one of the best passers I've seen at this level." Those are kind of big words, but he can really pass the ball. He just gets the ball, looks up, and has that incredible natural ability to put the ball right on the money. End quote. Pretty amazing. It's an amazing thing for a guy like that to say. Or maybe, if that's not enough for you, maybe to get your Laker adrenaline from a different source, how about this? Maybe you like hearing it from that weird cat from the Red Hot Chili Peppers, who told TMZ that he likes Lonzo, quote, better than Jason Kidd. He's just such an uplifting dude on the court, man. End quote. Okay, thanks, I guess. Better than Jason Kidd. LaVar Ball saying that Lonzo Ball is already better than Steph Curry thinks that you need to check yourself, dude, in some band. And that'd be like saying that you're a better bassist than John Entwistle. I mean, come on, man. Listen, Lonzo Ball obviously has got crazy court vision. He's got a high basketball IQ. He moves the ball brilliantly. Dudes love playing with him. He's going to make everybody around him better. And yes, he had a very nice summer league. Jason Kidd, though, is one of the best to ever play the game. But you do you. I don't know if the Lakers are back, but I know Laker fan is. The car flags are out. Laker honk is feeling it. And if they show out for a summer league game like that, it's going to be interesting to see how it looks and feels once the regular season starts, especially since Ball is not going to be doing it against some summer league scrubs, but rather all league alphas looking to put him in his place and shut his old man up. In the meantime, I'm just glad the Laker fan didn't take to the streets after adding another banner to their rafters last night. Yeah! Mad Dog. We're joined by Falcons quarterback Matt Ryan. In talking to a number of starting quarterbacks, Matt, who have been around the league for a while like you have, it seems like they're actually more motivated and more excited about the work that goes into being a quarterback now than they were earlier in their careers. So how different is your approach to being a QB now versus when you first broke in?
Yeah, it's night and day. You know, I think when you're young and you're just figuring it out, you're not really sure what's important, what's not important. I think the cool part about experience and, you know, playing as long as I have is that you figure out what works for you and where you need to spend your time to get the most bang for your buck. And, you know, I feel like I've figured that out at this point in my career, and that excites me. I know that the work that I'm going to put in is going to produce results. And, you know, that part of it's really fun and really exciting and awesome to be a part of.
Matt Ryan joining us. Now, in terms of where to spend your time, you spend part of your time in the offseason here in Southern California to work with 3D QB, which is something you started last year. Julio Jones was saying that he felt like your arm was actually stronger last year than it had been in the past. So what kind of work do you do at 3D QB last year and this year?
Yeah, you know what? I've gotten great work with those guys, Adam Dado and 3D QB out there in Huntington Beach. It's not a bad place to train. Pretty good weather there. But we put in a lot of work on the field in terms of conditioning your shoulder, training your throwing muscles, creating, you know, really good torque. And it's just been great work for me to be able to work with those guys. They're smart. They know what they're doing, and have really helped me. And I feel like, you know, as I've gotten older in my career, you know, finding the right way to train, finding the right things to do to help you be your best is really important. And those guys certainly help in that.
You know, Matt, you mentioned the loss, and that's how that spot goes. It shows you talking about that loss. And here we are 5 months later, so you just mentioned that it does motivate you. I mean, in this sense, do you revisit that game, or have you gotten everything that you need from that game in terms of motivation, and are you now just looking forward?
Yeah, I'm looking forward. You know, I think it sits in there. It's what burns the fuel. It's kind of the fire in there. You know, that game provides that for us. You know, but I'm not consumed by it. You know, I think that you keep looking forward. You start, you know, concentrating on what your next goal is and how you're going to accomplish it. But that fire is still burning from inside, you know, because of that game. And that's really, you know, what I think the message is. And you know, that's kind of how I feel heading into this season.
It seems to me you'd have to. You'd have to look at it that way, because if you get consumed by it, you can't go forward. But at the same time, and Matt, I've talked to a number of athletes over the years, as you might imagine, and this has come up repeatedly, you know, what's the stronger emotion? Do you think more about the ones that you get, or maybe the ones that get away?
You know, I've always felt like the ones that get away, for whatever reason, you know, have been the ones that I've thought about more. And throughout my life, it's been those things that have kind of burned at me to get better. And try and find ways to make sure that doesn't happen again. But it's definitely, you know, motivated by those things. You know, I probably hate losing more than I like winning. And you know, maybe that's not the right way, but that's kind of how I'm wired. And so that's certainly been my motivation throughout my career.
That's well said. I think all the great ones are like that. They hate losing more than they like winning, which is not to say you don't love winning, but you really hate losing. Now, I know you got to take a look at the team's new stadium earlier today. What did you make of the new home, and what do you think it's going to be like in terms of a home field advantage?
Man, it's unbelievable. I got to walk through today Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and, you know, it really is special. I was like in awe walking through there. I think it's going to be a great home field advantage for us. You know, the way it's designed and keeping noise in, I think it's going to be, you know, perfect for our organization moving forward. But, you know, even bigger than that, I think it's a really good thing for the city of Atlanta. It's something we can be very proud of, and there's going to be a lot of great Final Fours, NCAA championship games, Super Bowls here. You know, it's something that's going to be great for our city.
Yeah, Matt, one thought before you go about Julio Jones. He's coming off his third straight season with more than 1,400 yards. What impresses you the most about his game?
He's a competitor. I mean, everybody can see his athleticism, his skill, you know, how talented he is, his ability to track balls. I mean, everybody can see that. You can't miss that when you watch him play. But the way he competes, you know, just his grit, I mean, to be able to go after it week in and week out, year after year, to be the absolute best at what he does. It's impressive to be around that every day, and I've been lucky to play with him for as long as I have.
With Justin Fuente, this time last year you were getting ready to start your first season at a new school with a new team. So how different does it feel now that you've got a season under your belt?
Well, it feels great. You know, we got our entire coaching staff back. They all know what to expect on a daily basis. We're not doing anything for the first time anymore. Everything's on our second go-around. I think our players have a good understanding of what our off-season entails, the requirements and the discipline level that we want them to operate at on a daily basis. And with all that being said, you got to manage against coasting or the float. You know, you can't get comfortable. You got to continue to push forward and pay attention to those details that add up to big things.
And I know you're looking ahead, not back, but I would ask you this. In your first season, you win your division, you reach the conference championship game, you had a huge comeback in a bowl game to win it, and you clinch a double-digit win season. So when you look back on that first year, how proud are you of what the team was able to accomplish?
Well, I'm really, really probably most happy for our senior class. They've been through a lot. You know, they were recruited off of Sugar Bowls and Orange Bowls and that sort of stuff, and their career just hadn't seen that success, and we certainly didn't make it quite to that level, but it was really great to see those guys handle the transition and then in turn get Virginia Tech back to the 10-win plateau, something that not too long ago Virginia Tech was almost synonymous with was getting to 10 wins and winning the Coastal Division Championship for the first time in a little while and you know, playing admirably in the championship game against a very talented Clemson team. But there's another part of me that thinks about what we didn't get done and, you know, how close we were to pulling off something pretty special. And, you know, if we had just done a little bit better in some other areas, we could have had a really, really special season. So I think there's a lot of things to learn, but I'm happy that those older kids got to taste a little bit of success.
Yeah, I'm going to try and go back to the seniors in a minute, but going back to what you said about the ACC championship game, you had a great look at it. You had a chance to knock off the eventual national champion Clemson, so it doesn't sound like it's totally out of your system, is it? Or maybe does that still eat at you a little bit?
No, it still bothers me. It really does. It'll stay with me for a long time. And Clemson deserved to win the game. I'm not taking anything away from Dabo. And Clemson, they've got a fine team. They won the national championship, and that was a fantastic thing for the ACC and for Clemson. But, you know, it's a game where we had a chance to do something really, really special. We were really close. And we showed incredible toughness and discipline to battle back in that game. There was a couple times when we were close to getting run out of the stadium, quite honestly. And we continued to make some plays to continue to battle back and found ourselves with a chance at the end of the game. And that's really all you can ask is to put yourself in a position to have a chance to pull it off. And we just fell a little short. And I can remember many times, and whether I was in junior high shooting free throws to win the basketball game or playing football, my dad saying, you know, if you put yourself in that situation enough times, you're going to come through. But occasionally, it's, you know, you're not going to come through. And, you know, living and improving off of those moments are what's important. So we've tried to take it in stride, but it still doesn't mean it doesn't bother me.
Virginia Tech head football coach Justin Fuente joining us. You know, I could argue that the season would have been successful no matter what happened in that bowl game against Arkansas. But when you fell behind 24-0 and then you come back to score 35 unanswered points in the second half for the biggest comeback in school history, what did that then mean to you and to the program?
Well, I thought it was a special moment for our players. You know, I think I was fitting that team last year kind of holds the record, if you will, for the biggest comeback in Virginia Tech history because of the incredible grit and determination and toughness that they've shown. And, you know, we went in there at halftime, and our overwhelming sense in the locker room was, let's get back out on the field and go fix this thing. You know, it wasn't a bunch of guys hanging their heads or pointing fingers or doing anything other than saying, man, we certainly have dug ourselves a hole here. Let's go get out of it right now. And it was almost like halftime couldn't get over quick enough. And, you know, I know we were down by 24 points, but I felt good about where we were at. And we had had a good week of preparation. Getting to 10 wins was important to that football team. It wasn't that we were sleepwalking through the first half. It was one of those days where in the first half, the harder we tried, the worse it looked. And we kind of righted the ship there in the second half, and it was a pretty gratifying victory.
Justin, you and I have talked in the past about your relationship with Frank Beamer, and he's a big part of the Virginia Tech standards being so high. I know you're involved in the Drive for 25, which is a campaign led by Coach Beamer. Exactly what is that campaign, and why is that so critical?
Well, it's critical to the long-term success of Virginia Tech athletics. And, you know, the number 25 is pretty special here at Virginia Tech. Some people across the country don't know that Frank played here as well. He wasn't just a great coach here, but he was a great, great player here. And he wore number 25. And, you know, the Hokie Club is kind of like our, so to speak, booster club here at Virginia Tech. And Whip Babcock, our athletic directors, decided that we've got to get to 25,000 memberships, and Coach Beamer's kind of spearheading that. He's just out traveling the country. He's going to be in Dallas and in California, you know, and all throughout the country, because we do have Hokies spread out through the United States, continuing to raise awareness. The single best thing Hokies can do to help Virginia Tech is join the Drive for 25, join the Hokie Club. And we've tried to do things as a football program to pay homage to the number 25 with our special team player of the week. And it's really been fun to see Coach Beamer get involved with that in many different ways.
In terms of the RSVPs, these guys understand this. These names that I'm going to mention, some of these guys have absolutely nothing to worry about. I'm not saying that I play any favorites. I'm not saying there's any kind of fix in. I'm saying that Mark in Boston is an example. Mark in Boston's got a very good chance of getting on the air if he calls that day. He was the first to RSVP on the phones. That matters. That counts for something. I'm not saying that it's going to make a good call a great call. I'm saying it's like going first. You get credit for that. He was the first to RSVP, and he went all Tombstone with it.
No, I'm here for that green, Jim, and I intend to do it the old-fashioned way. That Wyatt Earp slap you in the face and throw you out the club level smack. July 28th is a long time to wait, but I guarantee you this. The regime change is coming. And I got a message for all those overproduced, gimmick-ridden scumbags.
And hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Overproduced, gimmick-ridden scumbags. All of them or just the one guy who won last year? He's talking about Leff, of course. Jeff Passan, first-timer, also in. He RSVP'd, and he's got a lesson for all the clones.
So to the rest of the clones, I'm going to say to you, shalom. And since you dingleberries barely know English, let me translate the Hebrew for you. It means hello, which is me introducing myself to the smack off for the first time. It also means goodbye, which is what every one of you can say to your chances after my call.
Jeff Passan, RSVP. Then you've got a guy who's won this thing before, professional athlete, Chael Sonnen. He was more into talking about the smack off than he was an upcoming fight that he was booked on this program to talk about.
Man, I'm pumped. All I want to do is talk about the smack off. I know I've got to get into Vanderlei Silva, but July 28th cannot get here soon enough. I'm telling you, I've told you this before, but I am coming in so hot. I am prepared for it to be my last time I'm ever invited, and I'm not kidding about that. I came in eighth last year. I'm still pissed off about it, and I came in late. I came in low because I was too nice, and I will not make that mistake again.
Chael Sonnen. Also, you've got the defending champ, Leff. Leff came in to RSVP and to crack Chael's dad bod.
Chael, sweet dad bod, bro. I mean, was your training regimen for this thing patching drywall and mowing the lawn? I mean, was this fight put on by Bellator or the Belly Tour? I mean, for God's sakes, Chael, have a take and suck in. Anyways, Romy, can't wait for July 28th when I make Chael kish my rings. Clean up on Chael 4.
Then you've got Brad. Brad and Corona. Now, Brad called but didn't RSVP. He called but didn't RSVP, but had to get in on Leff's RSVP.
Leff, thank you, by the way, for calling in Wednesday without any gimmicks so that we can all remember the one thing we like about your phone calls, the gimmicks. Jim, Leff's RSVP was like watching Carrot Top try to get through a stand-up routine without using any props. Bad idea, Leff. You are the John in Little Rock of one-trick phone calls, my friend. So get out your crack pipe, dust off your gorilla balls or whatever other props you have in that stunt bag of yours, and just get straight to what we want from you, the gimmicks.
Brad and Corona, and that was not an RSVP. He still has not RSVP'd. He just called. But we still don't know whether or not he's going to be there for the smack-off. And if you see a running theme here, and it's giving you a preview of what it might sound like on the 28th, lots of people coming in to crack on Leff for being nothing more than a gimmick guy, including Caleb.
Which means that your 2017 Smack-Off champion is... Oh, yeah. Oh, that's what I'm talking about. Some mood music for the defending champ. Now he's feeling it. Then Leff takes off his suit. I'm talking about his custom Jim Rome suit that he got straight out of Buffalo Bill's basement. Stares at Alvin DeLauro and says, would you rack me? I'd rack me. I'd rack me hard.
Somebody else cracking on Leff for a gimmick. That's Caleb. He's finished in the top 10 before. He's somebody to watch that day. Chad in LA also RSVP'd. And no way. He also wanted to kill Leff for being a gimmick caller.
What's Leff gonna do? Rather than what's Leff going to say. After flying in restricted airspace and then breaking and entering, I guess the only felony Leff to commit is, I don't know, like kidnap Jake or Logan and demand the $5,000 as ransom? His entire call is going to consist of Rome yelling over the air, give me back my son! Leff, I'm gonna bust you in your big mouth so bad you're gonna look like sloth. We should call you Leff in Lagoonies.
It's Chad in L.A. calling his shot. Then you have some guys who won the thing before, including Mark in Hollywood, who has something very special for his smack-off call.
I'm going to drop a little piece of intel that I've come across, a little nugget of information that was leaked to me that's going to change the game. You heard it here first, clones. It's going to be a game changer. It's going to shake up the world. And I'm going to be bringing back the crown to the land, Hollywood land. Oh, I forgot. Leff and Laguna should give a lecture on how to not overcompensate due to micropenis syndrome. Rack me!
You can't come in and talk about micropenis syndrome and then chase it by screaming, rack me. You tried, but you can't. Mike in Indy has won this thing before, although there is some debate as to whether or not he's won it before. My mind, he's won it before. Mike has won it before. Mike could win it again. We'll find out whether or not this is the year.
And I'm going to have all these other callers screaming like that tennis chick when I win it again this year. These callers are going to be screaming, help me, help me. You can call this an RSVP call, Romy, but I don't do RSVP calls. I make RESPECT calls. Find out what it means to me calls.
Speaking of which, Vic in NoCal had to squeeze his call in and respond to Mike's RSVP call.
Mike, did you really come in here with an R-E-S-P-E-C-T, find out what it means to me, Blast. Really, Mike? Did you seriously just try to Aretha us? You corny, man. See, you came in here today, Mike, calling other people scrubs, but I don't think you even know what that word really means. See, a scrub is basically a guy who thinks he's fly, also known as a buster. You know, he's always talking about what he wants, but he just sits on his broke ass. And that's you, Mike. And you just got TLC'd, my main man. You just got TLC'd.
So arguably, those are your top 10 RSVPs. Still waiting on an RSVP call from Iafredi, from Doc Mike, from Brad and Corona, from Stevie Carbone, who I think is in, from Joe in the OC, actually, among others. Remember, if you've won this thing, you could go away for 5 or 10 years and still show up day of and be in. You have a lifetime exemption if you have won. And if you want to call in an RSVP, that's even better. Clones, thank you very much for listening. Always good to have you here. In fact, I will see you right back here on Wednesday for another Daily Jungle. If you haven't left a review, it would be nice if you did so. Please do it. And if you haven't subscribed yet, make sure you do that too. And we'll see you next time. We are out.
A little nervous to call in because I thought maybe I wasn't cracked up for the radio caller thing when I got a little nervous talking to the Sparrow. He's not really that intimidating, but anyway.